Hey everybody, this is Griffin and welcome to Flight Sim Edge, although it's the show that's on the brink. I have to tell you, I admire all you guys listening to this show and those that have listened in the past. And we finished episode 6. We have 3 more I wanted like to try to crank out by the end of the year, but then there was a long hiatus. I think we can still do it, but let me get you guys up to date. And we had a little storm pass by the Tampa Bay area, and although it didn't make any significant damage, it did do scattered damage here and there, and our house got spiked. I do have a very, very robust, very good power supply unit. And but I don't have my Ethernet go through there because it tends to create latency. And when you have your main connection go through a surge protector, it can affect your speeds, your access speeds. And and the ever wanting thirst to have the quickest internet access possible. We pay good money to have 100 megabits per second, and there's no point in doing that if a surge protector is going to knock down that access by 20% or 25% in some cases. I'll have to look into it and see if there's something better. Technology has improved a bit in the last couple of years. But to make the long story short, my PC system got hit, and it will not post. At this point, I don't know if it's the CPU or the motherboard, or perhaps the graphics card. But it's one of those things, and it could be all three of those things. It's just a blank screen. There's nothing. The fans on the 1080 Ti will spin up, that's the only signs of life. I did a CMOS BIOS restart on the motherboard, and there was still nothing, no reaction whatsoever. So I was as silly as it may sound, I was, pretty disheartened. my wife and I, through some times that were financially challenging, saved our pennies in a jar. We built that computer together. It has a lot of, as silly as it may sound, sentimentality to it, I was very, very discouraged. I had just gotten through a really bad infection that I think was probably COVID. That's what knocked me out of commission, as you guys know if you listened to the last program. And health-wise, I'm doing much, much better. I don't seem to have any of the lingering, well, I can't say that. One of the lingering side effects, that's not the right term. One of the lingering symptoms is it's easier to be short of breath. That's not a huge, that's not anything that stands out. But I do notice, like, I can't hold my breath quite as long as I used to. I used to do a lot of scuba diving. I have a lot of classifications of diving, night diving, cave diving, just about everything but ice diving, which is kind of difficult to do in Florida. But and I used to pride myself on how long I could hold my breath. It was something that I practice, even though I currently don't dive. When I go swimming, I swim underwater and like to hold my breath, and I'm getting it back up there. But I used to be able to hold my breath for about 75 seconds. Divers are expected to hold their breath a good minute. They do when they're getting their classification, their diving permit. They do obstacles underwater and they have to hold their breath. We practice taking off all of our gear underwater and putting it back on. And there's a couple of exercises that bump up about a minute. If you can't hold your breath for a minute, you're gonna be pretty challenged when it comes to getting your diving permit. And I'm down to about 48 to 52 seconds. So, I've been sort of practicing here and there, and I'm just trying to stretch that to 55 seconds. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when I say 55 seconds, I mean consistently that I can do it. It's not going to be something that I can do sometimes and sometimes I can't. I got to get to the point where I can do 55 minutes regardless. I know that it's a benchmark that I can meet, and that will check that box, and then I'll move on probably to a minute from there and get back on track with that. So that's been the only lingering sort of remnant of this nasty thing that will kick your butt. Now, I was never tested. I probably should have been. All my friends said, you should have got tested. You were in a bad way. But love and care and being able to stay at home. I work out of my home, and that my career's been affected as well. I mean, I can still do what I do. Sometimes, as painful as it is, I borrow my wife's iPad and do things on my Android device and get by. But I need a computer. I really do need a computer. And I got a GoFundMe up. I'm not going to give you guys where that is. And some friends have come out. We've made a few $100, and we're going to try to figure out what's working on the old system and what's not, and what's the term? Cannibalize that, if you will. If something's working, sell it and try to get enough money to start a build. And I kind of want to walk you guys through that. I think that would be something. I don't know if we'll start the build before 2021. I want to try to crank out three more shows. Once I decided to, and I was down. When I'd say I was down for 3 days, I was in my room. I was moping. I was not in a good way. And between the health challenges and other things that are going on with my stepdaughter and her family, the other family, not us, she wants to be with us all the time and doesn't like to go over there, and that's been emotionally challenging, because that's what we want as well. But my wife hadn't gotten her citizenship yet and was still a college student when her dad decided to file for custody, all in the act to keep us from being able to have to charge for my wife to be able to charge alimony. She wasn't married to me at the time. You know, we were my career was not going well. We were living off of her student loans, and it was a tough time. And so he got primary custody, and we knew that was not going to go well because he's not a very good parent. He didn't care too much about her for the first 6 years of her life, and my wife stuck it out the legal way, and she became an American citizen. It was a very proud day for both of us, and she got her degree and started teaching. She got her education degree, and now she has her master's, and she's looking for an administrative position. And you know, things, and my career started doing well, and I started getting clients again and stuff, and my health improved, and things were really turning around for us, and are turning around. I'm not going to talk about it in the past tense. And we kind of have an environment that is loving and happy and joyful and, is educationally based. Our youngest daughter, and we both see our daughters as our daughters. We don't really use the term stepdaughter that often. I just say my eldest daughter, she raised my daughter. She's known my daughter since she was two and a half years old. So she's the only mommy my daughter recognized. I have, my situation is different. I have full custody, 100% custody, of my child. The woman who gave birth to my child, signed over her rights. And, so the, custodial issues are not present with her. And she lives with us 24/7, and my wife loves her as much as she loves her own daughter. And that's an easy thing to say, but it's absolutely true. She doesn't treat them any differently, and she's very loving and very affectionate to both. I'm a very fortunate man, and so those challenges were there, and so. You know, when the computer I took a lot of pride in was just getting some of the edges of Flight Simulator. I'll tell you, Flight Simulator, Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 was starting to frustrate me. I really felt like, I can't get this software to run. And other people are getting it to run. I'm convinced of that. There's a lot of people that are having problems, and they are a vocal group. And I was not really a part of that. I don't like to complain about things online. That's not my bag, but I monitor the complaints of others. And there were people that, but there's a lot, ton of YouTube content. They're running the program very well. Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 is used as a benchmark on three or four different content creators that build systems and stuff. And so I know that it can run. I know that it can run smoothly. I know people have long flights. They, take off from Newark and fly to Dallas and they have long flights. They fly to overseas to Europe, on airframes, of course, that are able to do that. And, I know that that's getting done. I can't imagine that these people would, you know, be creating content that's not true to have Microsoft's back. I don't think that that's going on at all. You know, it was not, for whatever reason, not running on my system. Now it's going to be interesting to see. If I build a new system, you know, is it going to be able, am I going to be able to use the old program? From what I understand, I might have to buy a new copy of it. I'm going to contact Microsoft and see what I can do. The computer was damaged in a storm, so maybe they'll give me mercy. We'll have to see, and we'll walk through that journey together as well. And I'm just gonna be completely open and transparent. And I want to tell you guys that I'm probably going to build in a different direction. Because some changes have taken place, and I've looked at some benchmarks, and there are some surprises. And so I know what you are saying. You're saying, why don't you do one of the builds that you have a previous show on? Well, there's a lot of hardware that have come out since that show, and I stand by those builds. I still say that according to the specs that Microsoft gives, and according to the specs of what you see within the program, those machines, when they were created, the 10th gen machine, the 9th gen budget machine build, should say build, and the Ryzen build, should be able to run Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 fairly smoothly. I think that there are some people that are running the program on 4K. I still stand by that 4K is not there yet, and it's not there for Microsoft Flight Simulator, and it's not there for a lot of other games too. I think that 1440p is the sweet spot. It's a beautiful picture. You're not getting any degraded picture where you look at it and compare it to a 4K monitor and go, God, how can I continue to game in this environment when that environment is available? That's not there. And 4K still introduces latency. It's you don't get the frame rates in a lot of games. And I, you know, even with the 3090 and some of the hardware that we've yet to talk about, you're not getting it. I still stand by those builds. Those builds are going to be budgeted out. In some respects, they're going to be more expensive. I've seen 3070s going for $1,200. And I want to put this out there to everyone that is in CPU and or GPU hell right now. Stick with the system you got. If that means you can't run Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020, then rock X-Plane 11. Do not give in to these scalpers or bots or whatever people want to call them. Don't pay $1,300 for an NVIDIA 3070. Don't do that. Do not do that. You're crushing it for everybody else if you have the monetary funds to be able to do that, and then that's a decision that you're going to make. And listen, I'm as capitalistic as you can be. You know, my job is in finance, and I'm a consultant both on the corporate level and the personal finance level. And you know, I'm the loophole guy. Take advantage of any legal loophole that's available to you. You know, be the best steward to your finances that you can. And, you know, if people can sell something and get a buck, they should be able to sell it and get a buck. Having said that, though, these prices are very artificial. And they're inflated. And it's thievery. And it perpetuates a condition that does not help the gaming community, let alone the flight sim community. And that's just the way that it is. Look, I was a big Ford Focus fan. And when the RS first came out, that's the top end Ford Focus. It's a sports car. You know, I'm a big JDM fan. You know, my wife and I drive an 86, or known as an FRS, but owners that know it and love it call it an 86, and that was before Toyota started calling it the 86. But that's either here nor there. I'm a car fan, and I really liked the Ford Focus, and when the RS came out. And when the Honda Type R came out, and I'm a fan of that car, too, there was MSRP and there were car dealers that were selling the vehicles above MSRP. Now, I didn't bitch and moan and complain back then because an RS, I think the MSRP was somewhere around 33,000 and dealers were getting about 37,000. So they were marking it up about $4,000 or so. If you had $37,000 and you wanted that car, I was like, then buy it. You're going to have the use of that car for a longer period of time than people that are waiting for the prices to drop to MSRP. And they did. They did drop to MSRP eventually. And that's fine. But when you have something that's being sold double and triple what its MSRP is, what it's worth, that's a different story. I would never advise my clients to spend three times what a car is worth. And I know there's the supply and demand factor. I get it. But this is a temporary situation. And by far, it's an artificial situation. I think it's perpetuated both by NVIDIA and AMD. At the very worst, they've made mistakes. I mean, at the very best, they've made mistakes. At the very worst, they're perpetuating this climate where they can get the best price for card when the cards do come out. Now, I've heard content creators say, well, why would they want to do this? The way they make money is selling graphics cards. And they would want the supply to be out there and they'd want to make the profit on the amount of cards that they sell versus what the rival sells. And that, when you look at a two-dimensional market scenario, is absolutely correct. And there's no reason why people shouldn't think that. But if they don't, if they're able to get a spike, legitimate spike, when they do have the supply, okay, yeah, they're going to be willing to do that. They're going to be willing to do that. Absolutely, 100%. They're going to get a 25% or 30% spike, permanent spike on their above MSRP on the cards that they sell. Yeah. That's fine. It is what it is. But be that as it may, it leaves me to tell you guys something. And I told you guys from the very first show, I am not a fanboy. If one company comes out with stuff and it's running smoother and better than the other company, faster, smoother, easier, better, then I will switch companies. And from what I've seen, and from the research that I have done, my next build is going to be a AMD Ryzen Radeon build. I always had it at the back of my mind, and I hadn't voiced it. Not because I was purposely avoiding it. It just didn't come to mind when I was doing a show. And it should have been an early question. And it's still an unanswered question. But it leads me to believe, looking at the numbers, that more than just raw computing power, and this is my belief, it is not substantiated in any kind of contacts I have within the industry. It has not been proven to be such by any stretch of the imagination. It is just my instinctual belief that at the core, AMD has an advantage, albeit probably a slight one, for running Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. Now, the only reason why I didn't think that that might be the case was because on the demos that were released at the big electronic shows, technology shows that Microsoft Flight Simulator 20, and even the content, the visuals that they showed were done on Intel based systems with NVIDIA GPUs. So if that's what they're releasing the program on, if that's what they're showing as the program running in its best light, why would AMD have any kind of an advantage? Obviously, that's not the case. Well, if we go back and we peel back time, those weren't the fastest CPUs. And they definitely were not the fastest GPUs out on the market. Intel and NVIDIA was and were. And I started to get this suspicion, though, because after release and before the new Radeon cards and before the, you know, before the new Radeon 6800 XT, before the new Ryzen chips came out, if you had a beefy AMD system, and this took flushing out, watching a lot, reading a lot, your system was running Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 better than, all things being equal, than an Intel system. Not by much. We're talking less than 10%, somewhere between 5 and 8%. And the high-end Intel and the high-end NVIDIA were running it far superior. So it sort of masked this, I don't want to use the word result, this phenomena. That's a good word. And so to flush this out was difficult, and there's not enough. You know how pharmaceuticals, you know, they're working on a vaccine for the malware that's out, human malware condition that's out there, and they're, you know, they have a control group and a test group, and you can look at so many numbers and make a determination, but there has to be amount. And there's nowhere near, at least that's available, the numbers where you can make this conclusion. But there is enough, what's the term, anecdotal evidence. So you have a top tier NVIDIA card running it on a ninth gen. You have a 30 series card running it on a ninth gen CPU. That's how many of those are out there that you know of. But the statistics are out there. And they're running Microsoft Flight Simulator at a, you know, very high pace. Then there's the 10th gen CPUs with that Skylake, and they're running it with the top tier, you know, the 3080s and the 3090s, and they're running it at a good pace, you know, even better than the previous example. And so you have a middle tier build. Let's say it's an i5, okay, ninth gen. Gosh, I already forgot what that chip is called. The ninety-six hundred, right? So you have an i5. And you're running it on a 1080 Ti or a 2080 or a 1660 Ti, and you're getting that mid-range kind of response, somewhere between 35 and maybe 48 frames, depending on the GPU and stuff like that. And you're having a, you know, the mid-tier Ryzen, okay, the 5,000, not 6,000 graphics cards, okay, running it on the CPU generation that's before the one that was just released, it seemed to me, when I could make the comparison, and again, it wasn't very often, but they seemed to be having less problems, slightly higher frame rates, they're like at 50. So if you were at 48, you look at the Ryzen builds, it's like at 55, 56, getting really close to that 60 frame per second Nirvana, the goal of every flight simulator. And I noticed that. It's something that I noticed. I couldn't confirm it because we didn't have a true apples to apples comparison of the high end. But now we do. And now we can. And Ryzen is running Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 faster. Some say around 5 or 6% faster. I have found it's about 10 to 12 times faster. I'm a simulator nerd. The purpose of the build of my machine is to push my simulator. I can do business on a laptop. I'm surviving doing business with an iPad whose iOS I can't stand and an Android. And as much as I own an Android phone and use it every day, including recording this program, I don't like Android. And I don't like Chromebook, and I don't like any of those formats. I think they're completely unintuitive. I mean, the only reason why Android's intuitive me now is because I've used it for 4 years. I know how to get around it. But that doesn't mean that it's constructed well, because it's not. It's not constructed well. The best operating system that I ever had on a phone was my BlackBerry. If BlackBerries were viable phones to this day, I would have them. I'm not going to get into, they have the keyboard and they have the little thing with the thumb, the little joystick. Thumb pad thing. But those were much more effective. Yes, you can swipe faster than you could type on a BlackBerry, but you did not get the errors that you get from swiping. By the time you go back and correct what you've done, especially if you're doing, I'm not talking about one sentence Twitters, tweets, or text messages. I'm talking about notes, sometimes multi-page notes, a two-page note or a three-page note. You could totally do that on a BlackBerry. You could do a whole report on a BlackBerry. And the phone call, which, I mean, after all, these are phones. It's almost like the last thing they try to do is make the phone call good. Dropping calls, not connecting, blah, blah, blah. The BlackBerry beat the devices that are out right now in spades. Unequivocally, a better phone experience. The BlackBerry was a phone first and a computerized input device, multimedia device second. the quality of phones that are out right now in terms of actually making a phone call, calling somebody up and having a conversation with them, are crap. I don't care if it's 4G, 5G, 4G Lite, whatever. It blows. And take it. This is somebody who lost a client on a phone call when phones were, well, they're still very expensive, you know, when the, I don't know if you remember the cell phones that had the little pull-out antenna, you know, those days. Not the big brick. I didn't have one of those. Or the dedicated car phone that was hardwired into your car. No, the little flat phone that was small, tiny in some respects. And I was talking to a client and I dropped the call and I knew I was going to lose that client because we were at a pinnacle, potential client, I should say, point in the negotiations. I threw the phone out the window on I-4 going from Orlando to Tampa. I did westbound. I did. So, you know, what does that illustrate? That illustrates that, and that was a very expensive phone. I think I got the Razor after that. My trusty flip phone, and I had that for years, and the only thing that got me off of that was the BlackBerry. But, you know, I understand being frustrated with phone calls for a long time. And I remember what it was like in that era. But I still say, in that era, phone calls were more reliable. I didn't drop multiple calls a day. I didn't have to wait 30 seconds for my phone call to connect to my wife. And this is my wife. We're on the same network. We're on the same plan. For a while there, we had the exact same phones until I clumsily broke my phone. And then I got a new phone, and I got one of these super cases on it. No, that's not slim. It's not slick. It doesn't have the... It's thick. It's like holding a brick. It's like the brick phone all over again. But... it does protect my phone. I've dropped my phone down the stairs on the outside of my apartment. I've inadvertently sat on it in the car. My daughter's dropped it, my youngest daughter. So if I had replaced that phone and not put this case on it, this phone, I am positive, would have been broken. And it is... I just took it out of the case to clean it because a little moisture got in. I left it in the bathroom while I was taking a shower, and the steam got in there. So I had to open the case and wipe everything down. It's pristine. It looks brand new, like it came out of the box. It's got a screen protector and... Yeah, on one day I'll tell you, and it's not the Otter, which is twice as much as this. Hold on. I had to grab my glasses real quick and look on the, it's the UB Pro. And they have different ones depending on the model of the phone that you're rocking. And, it's an amazing case. I think I paid $26 for mine. It was a little bit of a markdown. I could be wrong on that. It was like $24.99 or $25.99. And my phone is pristine in this cocoon. I've had decent cases before, but I never bought a case with the idea that it was supposed to protect the phone. Absolutely. And if you go to the video, if you go to their promotional materials, you'll see them drop it off a crane and off a four-story building and kick it down the road. And now I can't verify that it can do all of that, but I can tell you that I have dropped it, and it's my apartment's on the second floor, and the steps are made of cement and steel, and it just didn't like fall out of my pocket and go on the step in front of me, and I'm like, oh, it fell down. No, it cartwheeled. It was like I did it on purpose. It went down the flight, cartwheeling, and went off because our stairwell turns, and so there's like a ledge or a platform between one flight, between that first half of flight and the second half of flight. And it hit that, continued to rolling. Imagine a rolling phone, as a rectangular object, spinning, skipping and spinning. And it flew off the ledge, okay? Which there's a banister there. It should have, you know, but it went through the cracks of the banister area, went past the bushes, and landed on the sidewalk with a thud. And I was like, oh my God. And the phone was maybe 2 weeks old. Not that it's an exclusive. It's not a Galaxy anything. It's not a five. I don't believe in paying $500 for a phone. I pay $200 for a phone. I make sure that it has I do my research. You know, this has a Snapdragon octa-core. It runs very fast. I mean, if I'm standing next to somebody that has the latest phone, does their app come up first? Yeah. By like a second or 1.2 seconds. So, and I don't use my phone as a camera. My wife does. I'm sure she'd love to have a more advanced phone with a more advanced camera mechanism, but I really don't. And so, yeah, I mean, this is like a probably the highest tier of the low-end phones. It's not a $90 phone. It's not a phone that you get free when you change to a new plan. But it's like a $225 phone. It's not any more than that. And I will have this phone until it dies. And then I'll pick another phone that'll be $225. If I was a multimillionaire, I would not spend more. I want to evaluate myself. I like to be realistic with my. I would not spend. I think at the most, and it's going to have some sort of bell or whistle that I really love. Well, I'll take that back. Let me take that back. Motorola is making a flip phone. It's a smartphone. When you flip it open, it looks just like the Razr. And when you flip it open, it's a full screen, just like a cell phone is right now, full screen cell phone, like a Galaxy or a iPhone. You get what I'm saying. And then it folds up. Then when you're done, it folds back up and it looks like a Razr. Again, when you fold it back up, and you could stick it in your pocket, you could stick it in your breast pocket and stuff. The technology is new on those phones, and so they're hovering around $1,000. I wouldn't get one now because from what I understand, there's still bugs. But let's say I was in a financial position where, a better financial position than my wife and I are in now. We're not in any dire straits or anything like that, but we live on a budget. And, you know, but let's say that that our budget was, you know, increased by a fair amount compared to where we are now. Would I pay $500 for that phone for the convenience of, you know, if it was bug-free and worked just like any other cell phone, there wasn't inherently something wrong with it because, in fact, it was a flip phone? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. To be able to stick it in my breast pocket, for it to be that thin, yeah, and rock it like I had a, like a back in the day when I had a razor. Absolutely. I would spend $500 on that phone. Maybe a little bit more than that. I would never finance a phone. I don't believe in financing phones. If you can't afford your phone, it shouldn't be in your pocket. That's, as a financial advisor, I tell, I have clients that are very wealthy clients, make far, far more money than I make. I have friends that make far more money than I make. And I tell them, you know, and some of them are on this plan. The only plan that I agree with is the one where you don't own the phone. You know, they get a new phone like every year and a half, every 2 years. It's just automatic. They get a new phone. That plan, I'm fine with. Because they're just perpetually paying a fee to have a phone that's the new phone. I'm fine with that plan. That's a decision that they make in their lives and what have you. And it's all good. But to finance a phone that at the end of it, it's going to be your phone. No, if you can't afford the phone, if you can't afford to buy the phone, well, I can't buy a $700 phone, Griff. I don't have that kind of money. Then don't rock a $700 phone. Plain and simple. You know, sometimes you got to make decisions in life. And sometimes the decisions aren't what you like. But there is no reason why an average person, and I mean even person that lives on Twitter and texts everybody in the universe and lets you know every time they're going to the bathroom or when they blew their nose or when they're at Burger King getting a Whopper. And you, if you follow this person, you will know every aspect of their useless life. Well, their life is not useless, but I mean, when I say useless life, I mean in the way that they're living it, not that they're a useless person. I don't believe that that's ever the case, but except for rare exceptions. But there's no reason why that person cannot live that lifestyle on my phone. My phone's a $250 phone. When I purchased it, it's probably a $99 phone now because I've had it for 2 years. That's about a year, actually. It's about a year old, I should say that. So it's you know, probably a $170 phone. Oh no, Griff, that's just not. Yeah, it is true. It is true. My daughter has, you know, what they used to call an Obama phone. I don't know if people outside of the States understand. It's a phone basically given to you for free. Doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles to it, needless to say. Her phone is slower than mine to a significant degree. But her phone would probably be like $80, $70. As part of her medical condition, that she was born with. And again, I think I've told you this in other shows. She's fine now. You know, she lives the life of a very healthy 13-year-old about to turn 14 in December. You know, but she was born with a serious condition and almost passed away and had to have two open heart surgeries, and it was touch and go. But she's absolutely fine now. Plays the clarinet, plays the viola, is a regular, happy, go lucky teen, on honor roll, perfect attendance. And so, you know, but she's still on, you know, a government medical program. And through that government medical program, she gets a phone. And I wouldn't want that phone. But anything in the $200 range that's out right now, you could totally live your Twitter, Facebook, Instagram life experience with very little problems. You know, I have a friend, a good friend. I love her. She's generous. She's beautiful. And, you know, she's at a financial point in her life where she's making changes and stuff like that. And she got the Galaxy Note with the pen, and it's thin and all of this stuff. She can't afford that phone. She's financing that phone. And, you know, I said, you don't need that phone. Oh, yeah, I do everything on my phone. You don't need that phone. And she doesn't. But she's paying a premium in her life that's money that could go to other things. You know, I pay $200 for my phone and it's mine. I don't have to make another payment. I don't have to do anything with it. But anyways, how did we get off on that tangent? See, that's why I love this program. We talk about so many things. And we're going to talk about the Ryzen build that I have planned. And more about Ryzen versus Intel, Radeon versus NVIDIA. And we're going to do that show very, very soon. I promise you that we will do it very, very soon. And maybe within a couple of days. And let's crank out three more shows before the end of the year. That was my goal, to do 10 shows a year with two extra content shows. What do they call those again? I forget. And we'll see you guys very soon. I appreciate your patience. I'm sorry for the long intervals between the programs. I will shore things up. I will tighten my bootstraps, and it won't happen again. And we're going to talk about everything that's Flight Simulator. We're going to really get into the woods about a lot of different things, more than just hardware technology, what's going on software-wise, and why people are suffering with this program and can't get it to run after they made investments and you know, dedicated a piece of their lives to trying to have this program run, and see what's going on. So those are going to be future subjects for future shows. It's going to be exciting. And what can I say? Take care of yourselves. Stay healthy. Take care of each other. And wheels up soon.